All right, I think we'll get started. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm really thrilled to be moderating a conversation on building a multi-hyphenate career, and even more thrilled to be with this very inspiring group of women next to me. I'm Bianca Bagat. I run the Global Creative Marketing team at AWOL, and I'm fortunate enough to actually get to work with all of these women. So I wanted to start by just briefly introducing the panelists and bragging a little bit about them. So I'll start on the left with Tiffany Yu. Tiffany is the head of music at WeTransfer, overseeing music strategy for WePresent, which is the editorial arm of WeTransfer. In her role, she builds out projects with artists around the world, from emerging young talent to really renowned artists like Solange and Riz Ahmed, FKA Twigs. Prior to WeTransfer, she was the vice president of digital marketing and innovation at 360 Group, where she drove campaigns for artists like Deadmau5, Frank Ocean, Calvin Harris. And before 360, she was a digital marketing manager at Red Light Management, where she worked with lots of artists from Lionel Richie to Giorgio Moroder. Yes, we can applaud Tess.
Thanks a lot.
Next to Tiff, we have Zalita, who's truly a multidimensional artist herself. She is an LA-based singer, songwriter, and filmmaker who matches her fiercely honest songwriting with self-directed videos that showcase her very singular aesthetic that she was able to hone in part through her film studies at NYU. Zalita has recently signed to AWOL, which we're thrilled about. After earning massive global success on her own as a DIY creator, she's generated over 120 million global streams to date, grown her social footprint by more than 600,000 followers in the past 6 months alone, and has generated viral success with multiple music videos.
Thank you. Hey, guys.
And last but most certainly not least, we have Katie Beloyne. Katie Beloyne is the co-head of marketing at AWOL, overseeing really truly innovative chart-topping marketing campaigns for artists like Girl in Red, Jungle, Little Sims, Gus Dapperton, and many more. Prior to AWOL, Katie was a VP of marketing at Atlantic Records, where she spearheaded the careers of 21 Pilots, Paramore, Young the Giant, Fun, and many other fantastic Fueled by Ramen artists. And before that, she began her career at CAA, where she worked with the bands Warped Tour, Blink-182, Kelly Clarkson, and many other marquee acts. Cool. So we are here to talk about the intersection of music and other creative industries, and specifically artists who are interested in multiple different career or creative pursuits. So I figured we'd kick off, Katie, I'll direct this to you, and then obviously everybody feel free to chime in. I guess the first question to really ask is, in today's music landscape, do you feel like it's in every artist's best interest to have a multi-hyphenate career? And is dedicating time to projects across various industries now a mandatory part of having a career in music?
I think that above all, the most important thing for artists today is authenticity. Obviously, the music industry is very saturated, and the barrier to entry is lower than ever across not just music, but a lot of other disciplines. And I think that people can see through that, you know, anything that is inauthentic. So it would not be wise to pursue a multi-hyphenate career if your heart's not in it as an artist. So I think that's where everyone should start. As a marketer and also as a music fan, I think that, you know, having other areas of interest is exciting because it gives us more to sink our teeth into as a label and also just as a fan of music. And we have gotten to work with so many amazing artists that have just been such a pleasure to work with across film, TV, fashion, gaming, podcasting, and music. So to get back to the core of the question, don't think it's mandatory, but I do think that it allows artists to cut through in different ways because there are so many opportunities that are provided nowadays that haven't been before.
Tiff, I'm sure you have something to say about this too.
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate to work with a lot of multi-hyphenate artists at WePresent. I don't think it's a mandatory. I think if there's a message that you have to say or there's something thematic and it can't be told by one vertical, then of course, like, go into something else. I think naturally, the artists that we've worked with, like Little Sims, she's been an actress and a musician, and so naturally, she started writing writing the film that we produced. It was I Love You, I Hate You. It was a track off of her album that was, for her, the hardest to write. And the concept came from a relationship with her father. That's all not going to come out in a 3-minute song. So working with her as a filmmaker was really interesting. And it was her first stab at making a film. So naturally, it went into that because she's songwriting, and so she's writing the script. So I think it's interesting to give artists that first chance, but I don't think it's completely mandatory if it's not authentic or if it's not something that you're compelled to do.
Yeah, I think Little Sims is actually a really good example of what both Tiff and Katie are talking about. We've been able to see, she kind of simultaneously pursued a career in both film and in music, and we've been able to see firsthand, just sort of like as her profile as an actor has grown, her audience as a musician has also expanded. But those are both things that were really truly, you know, true passions for her. They were things that she authentically really wanted to go down those paths. And now she's gotten further involved in fashion as well, which has exposed her to an even different audience. So it's been interesting to see as an artist, watching an artist just pursue creative interests and then seeing how sort of those audiences, the kind of net product of that is that she's built just this overall fan base. So she has this following that now anytime she's promoting a creative project, it's just kind of grown and augmented the fan base.
Yeah, and it's not easy. I think, you know, through that project, that was 22 drafts of a script.
Yes.
It's not easy to just jump into a different vertical, and I think a lot of artists probably recognize that now. But how have you found it?
For me, I think like the visual world that I've created through my music videos have always been like the through line of my project, and it's definitely like propelled my music career. So, and I also think like artists kind of have to be multi-hyphenate right now, because like half of being an artist today is marketing yourself. So like learning how to utilize TikTok and I think that's like just as important as making the music.
Yeah, definitely. I think the process of it has been really interesting to watch. You know, with Sims even, it's just like the writing of it. You can see even when you're watching the film, the writing of it, or like her struggling with, okay, this is how I pictured it, and this is how I wrote it. And you kind of see this like push and pull, which is super fun to see as an artist growing. I think that's definitely a part of artist marketing.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it's really cool to see what messages, you know, you're saying through your videos and mm-hmm. directing, and then also seeing that struggle or push and pull with like how you want to present an album, a full project.
Definitely. And I think like having a hand in both is like, yeah, has always been so important for me. I edit my own videos, do like everything on my own videos, and definitely like enables me to make sure that like the end product is exactly how I envisioned it in my head and like wanted it to come across.
I think that's like, this is another question that I wanted to ask you specifically, Zoe.
Yeah.
Like as an artist who's navigating creative projects across music, film, and then also the marketing of it that you mentioned, how much do you intentionally think about maintaining creative cohesion and like, you know, brand identity across all the projects that you're working on?
So I definitely think about it a lot. I think that, again, like the visuals that I've created have always been like the through line of my project. So it's almost enabled me to explore my sound maybe in a different way that like other artists that are more music forward maybe would be given more grief for. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think a lot about like maintaining, you know, very specific like visual, creative cohesion across my visuals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think you do such an amazing job of extending it not just from music videos but to socials and having really consistent marketing and branding across basically everything that has your name on it.
Yeah, thank you.
Kind of going in, like broadening out to like other artists, you know, Tiff, you've worked with so many artists, amazing artists throughout your career. I'm curious, like having worked with a lot of artists that have pursued careers in like a multitude of different industries and disciplines, who are some artists that you've seen do it really well, and are there any sort of key takeaways that you've seen about like what contributes to their success?
I think like cohesion, I think the story and through line, like I've seen all of your stuff, and it's nice because it's there's a consistent message, and it also shows that you have values that you stick to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for any artist, is that you have to stick to something. You have to stand up for something. The artists that I've seen do it really well is a bit different on the We Present, We Transfer side. You know, we've worked with Lito Pimienta. She's a Colombian artist, and she's not just a Colombian or a Latinx artist. She's someone who's Afro-Colombian, who's from the northern part of Colombia, and there's a lot of indigenous culture there. So I've seen her do it well because she weaves it into everything. She makes her own, like, costumes, and she talks about it, about the struggles of being a female, you know, in that region of Colombia. That's kind of the stuff that we like to sink our teeth into, is just unusual stories in communities that are very underrepresented. So, you know, we look at, like, the general genres of music, and then we kind of dive deeper into it, or we tell something that another artist or another creative community would love to hear about. I think Moses Sumney, who we've worked with, is a complete polymath, and I think he's quite interesting because we did a film with him that was 67 minutes long, and it was all around Asheville, North Carolina, which has a lot of deep-rooted, horrible history. But to him as a creator, he feels good creating there. And the story in itself was interesting because he feels good creating there, whether that's a film or photography or just getting into fashion. And all of that, all of those verticals kind of help him reclaim that land to his narrative. I think that is important. That's a great story to tell.
Yeah, I think this idea of, like, authenticity and, like, having confidence in the stories that you want to tell is, like, a really important one. I was lucky enough to work with Childish Gambino for 6 years when I was at Glassnote before coming to AWOL, and I feel like it was just this incredible crash course in being a multi-hyphenate artist. And the one takeaway that I really sort of learned from him over the years was just sort of the power in trusting your creative instinct and your vision and just your ideas. I think especially now, in a time when it's so easy, there's so much data and analytics at our fingertips, we get so caught up in, like, potentially trying to curate our art to what the audience might like. And while I think that there's value in that in some ways, I think it's also just really important to kind of not think about the audience sometimes. I think if you think about your favorite films or pieces of music or art, I'm sure that a lot of times it's stuff that you never had, you know, imagined before or thought that you might want. I know for sure when Donald made Awaken My Love, like, certainly no one was asking Childish Gambino to make, like, a psychedelic Prince King Crimson record, but it turned out that's, like, what we all loved and wanted from him. And so, you know, the same thing with Atlanta, it was this really left-of-center storytelling, and I think that he was always really good at just sort of sticking to the stories that he wanted to tell and figuring out the art that he wanted to put out, and didn't worry so much about the audience, and then the audience will come, you know, if it's something really refreshing and authentic and visionary, you know, you'll be able to build an audience around it. Katie, something we talk about a lot at AWOL is, we have so many amazing artists who are kind of pursuing careers, like, across multiple industries, and one of our challenges is sort of, like, how do we connect the audiences? If you have an audience that knows you from acting or from gaming or from fashion or from podcasting, how do you kind of connect those audiences to create one sort of mobilized fan community? What are some ways that we can do that?
I think we definitely spend a lot of time talking about this because we work with so many amazing artists who do have different creative pursuits. Social media affords the ability for the artist to speak directly to their fans and inform them about all of their different passions. But I think it's so important too for us as on the business side to work behind the scenes as well and make sure that we're connecting the dots. You know, if we're working on a podcast, like, finding ways, if it's a Spotify podcast, for Spotify to market and connect the music. If it's on Twitch with gaming, you know, finding opportunities to speak about music or have the artist promote in that way or even perform. So I think that, you know, it's something that we have to constantly work very hard at, but and it's not always easy by any means. You know, I think there are, right now, even aside from different creative pursuits, we live in a time where, you know, catalog tracks will take off and we have viral moments. And this happened with us last year with Little Sims. Her track Venom from her album Gray Area took off in a TikTok viral moment, and we were actively promoting a brand new album and figuring out ways in real time to connect the dots between promoting, you know, sort of drafting off all of that excitement and audience awareness and pulling people into, like, when that took off, Little Sims didn't even have a TikTok profile. So kind of like educating and working through that in real time was just a really great experience. And I think, you know, the industry is constantly evolving, and we're editing marketing as we go. So I think that there's no one right answer, and it's just been really exciting to be part of the music industry during this time and constantly discovering ways to do that, both by, you know, sort of speaking to artists and having them figure out how to promote in the right way that isn't like jamming a message down people's throats, and also, you know, trying to like pull levers behind the scenes as well. And I think ultimately, you know, not every fan of an artist's music is going to jump over and all of a sudden want to be a gamer or vice versa. But, you know, the most important thing is that we're making, like, we're creating awareness of all of the different pursuits and finding avenues to connect the dots.
Yeah, I think that all makes a lot of sense. Zoe, how have you experienced that, like, with your projects? Have you found ways that have been particularly effective at trying to connect your audiences?
I mean, I guess, like, across different social platforms
and
stuff.
Yeah, or, like, people that are discovering you from film and directing them to your other music.
Yeah, I guess just, like, cross-promoting and all of the different... But I guess also, like, something interesting I found is, like, so I'll make a music video and put it on YouTube. Like, if I were to just, like, upload a clip of it to TikTok, probably wouldn't do that well on that platform. So,
right.
Like, finding ways to reappropriate content that I've made for one platform and, like, reappropriate it and make it for another platform. And I do that across, like, all the different platforms. But so, like, for TikTok, for example, like, finding a sound that's trending and then, like, recutting my video to that sound and then, like, coming up with something interesting to, like, drive people to the video.
That's an excellent point. I think that's actually, like, an incredible skill set that artists that really understand how to do that, it's a highly successful technique. Sure.
Then also you don't have to like remake content for every single platform, but just like learning how to, recut things to make it fit for different ones.
Yeah, and like meet the audience where they are, for
totally.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Tiff, I wanted to ask you, you know, if you're an independent artist who like has not assembled a team yet around you, what are some things that artists can do on their own to sort of attract third-party partners, like WeTransfer, other brand partners, or labels, or management, whoever it might be, to want to get on board and, you know, help with their creative pursuits?
Oh my God, this is a little hard. I think these days, it's your third party can be very unconventional. I think it's someone who will. I think it comes down to the idea, and the message that you want to say, or the through line, like the story that you want to tell. But I definitely think. I've seen a lot of artists like pitch, or we've seeked out stories about specific initiatives, and it's interesting because you can get very intentional. So you know, something that we've already worked on with like Girl in Red, we were very intentional about, okay, if we were to do a graphic novel, we would want someone with the same or similar upbringing and similar experience, and I feel like artists can nearly do that now, and try to assemble a team where it's like your manager is similar to you and believes in the same things you believe in, or even just like a film director, or you know, anyone around you. Your third party can be quite intentional. I feel like more people are outspoken about that now and are willing to offer, like, if it's talent or if you're if you just need resources. I think that's something that people are willing to give if they have that experience. I mean, I think it's easy for me to say. I know you as an artist. I know that's got to be incredibly difficult to find a bunch of like-minded people that kind of accurately do what you need done.
Yeah, definitely. I was like fully independent for the last like 5 years, and this last like 2 months, I've built a team around me, which has been so exciting. And it's definitely, that was like one of the biggest things for me. It's like, I need queer people on my team. I need women on my team. And like, the people that like accurately represent me and like my message. And then also like people who see me as a multi-hyphenate artists and are like seeing opportunities for me, not like, don't just see me as like a touring musician, but see opportunities for me outside of just music.
And which we notice. I definitely notice. I talk to people on their teams and kind of make sure that their intentions are aligned.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, that's the most important part, is that every person we talk to on your team is going to give that same answer.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. I feel like finding people who like really understand you and who you are and will represent you in a way that you feel, you know, you want to be represented. I think as an independent artist, as difficult as it is, like at least you are the one who's having all the conversations and are able to kind of represent yourself and make sure that the way that you're communicating out to the world is exactly how you want that to look. And when you think about it, like when you start assembling a team, like you as an artist are no longer the one that's able to have conversations with all of the various partners, with Spotify or music supervisors or brands or whoever it is. And so you want to make sure that you have people who are really representing you well and, you know, hold true to your values. And I think that's a really good point. You know, you just went through this process of assembling your team and finding good people around you. And, you know, Katie, we're talking to artists all the time. Like, are there any other sort of like skill sets or characteristics that you think are important for artists to look out for as they're making those decisions?
I think another thing for me was like someone who has strong opinions, that even if they're not like my opinion, and that can have like open, honest dialogue with me, and like someone that I also like respect their opinion and that I can like bounce off of, and not someone who's just like a yes man all the time. Because I mean, that's the thing about like, yeah, being fully independent. It's like there is nobody. You're just like, okay, there's nobody to bounce things off of, you know? So I think that was super important for me. And then again, yeah, somebody who sees me as more than just a musician. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think like honesty, trust, someone who you know right off the bat is hardworking and is gonna, you know, fight for you and do so on your behalf, like embracing your values, is the most important thing. And also I completely agree with having somebody who isn't afraid to disagree, because mm-hmm. I think that's the only way to grow, is by, you know, kind of assessing all of the opportunities, all of the different sides of, you know, any sort of decision-making process, and make, you know, just sort of working in tandem with you to vet everything and make the best decisions.
Definitely.
I think that's important. I think everyone has said it, and I'll say it from like the brand end of it, is that when we look at for artists to work with, we have, you know, we look at the capability of working with them and not having them work for us. And I think that's important to understand now with labels and managers, is remember, like, they're not just a touring asset. They're not an asset for us to have and create an ad for and to endorse a brand. Like, I think that's where I feel like brands go faulty, is that they look at artists as property to do something for them versus doing something with them.
Yeah, that's a good sort of segue too. Like, I wanted to touch on, you know, a little bit more of a specific question for you, Zoe, because I have so much admiration for this part of your story. How did you navigate financing and producing your film projects when you were just a completely independent, unsigned artist?
So definitely through like a multitude of ways. I will say, like, in the very beginning of my career, I had a little leg up in that I was at NYU. So like free labor, just students wanting to work on each other's projects. And then like access to equipment and stuff. But I ended up taking a gap year, and like in that time had a full-time job and like reinvested money back into videos. I've done things like crowdfunding, so like Indiegogo. And then in the last few years, as the videos have proven to all like do pretty well on YouTube, I have cold emailed brands that I feel like would align with my vision and with the video content, and have gotten just like brand sponsorships and have funded the videos through product placement and like various social brand stuff.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's so impressive. And I think that what you just said too about like kind of finding a creative network around you, so many of the artists that I've worked with and that have, you know, put out amazing creative projects have found that sort of creative community, whether it's via film schools or via just people that you are meeting in your hometowns. Finding people that sort of complement your skill sets, like somebody might be a cinematographer, somebody might be a stylist, but kind of helping each other out and kind of growing your projects via this creative community, I think is really effective.
Definitely. Yeah, I still work with like the same core, like three people as I have over the last like my first music video like 5 years ago.
That's
like,
amazing.
Yeah, find people that are like in the same place as you are and that also like want to grow And that's like the most exciting thing, like growing together and like getting to bring each other up. And,
yeah. And then in terms of reaching out to brands, you know, like at AWOL, we have a team that will reach out to brands on our artist's behalf. But I think that a lot of the same sort of principles sort of remain. It's kind of like knowing who you are as an artist and knowing the story that you have to tell and what sets you apart and how the partnership is going to be sort of mutually beneficial for both parties, and making sure that you're reaching out to brands that just really sort of align with who you are and your audience, and kind of approaching it from a really thoughtful perspective always works. And frankly, you know, like reaching out and DMing or emailing brands, I think, you know, when you're coming from with a great idea or you have a really thoughtful pitch, I think, you know, it can never hurt. And I definitely have heard multiple stories of that really paying off for artists as well.
I've also had like friends email on my behalf and like my manager when I didn't have one, or like, you know, create, make a fake email. Like,
so yeah. Smart. Love yeah. that.
That's amazing. I think the same goes for artists working with other musicians and artists too. I feel like we work with an artist, Lizzie McAlpine, who has a number of features on her forthcoming album, including Phineas, who she just DM'd and was like, hey, would you want to work with me on a song? And fortunately, he said yes. So I think creating those relationships and going back to the point of authenticity, like just building them kind of from the ground up, and not, you know, it means so much. Like it's... It doesn't necessarily mean more, but it just has a different, there's such a different approach when you're asking as an artist versus coming through on either the label side or management side or another team member. But when Bianca and I first met Zoe, we were just in awe of so many things, one of them being her resourcefulness with brand sponsors on videos. And Bianca, I know that's an area that you work on a lot. So I'm curious, in terms of like what brands are looking for these days, are there any specifics that an artist should be mindful of that they can put forward in addition to all of the things that we've talked about?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it varies so much brand to brand. Like being candid, I think for a lot of brands, like the main thing that they look at are metrics, like follower numbers or view counts. And so it's important to sort of like know that about your business and your project and be able to represent that and brag about it if you've already been able to generate momentum. But then a lot of brands, and like WeTransfer is a great example of this, it's just really about great ideas and coming to them with a great idea that could really make sense for their brand in addition to the artist. And so, you know, I think just being really thoughtful about those things is important for sure. I'm curious, Tiff, from your perspective, being the one on the receiving end of a lot of those DMs and emails, like what is it that WeTransfer is like typically looking for when they're considering artist partnerships?
I mean, I feel really lucky to be working at a creative tech company. I don't look at metrics. I look at the story, and I look at, you know, I think my favorite types of things to do is getting a concept that's difficult to explain out there in a creative way. Our curation team at WePresent, we're a team that we have pretty strict curation guides where we... Diversity is at its core. So on our editorial platform, we've already worked with 1,000 artists over in 100 countries, and our curation meetings can be thematic. So they can be like artists that have dealt with the theme of invisibility, or how do artists translate jealousy in a different way? But then they can also be artists from countries that we haven't represented. And I think what's also interesting is that WeTransfer is available in 186 countries, which I don't think people realize that Spotify isn't, Google is not available in that many countries. And so it's right for us to represent the real world. And also most of our users are from the creative industry. And so we're constantly looking at what creative projects would inspire another creative. So in that way, I feel kind of lucky to not look at the obvious. And usually we kind of harp into the unexpected and the unusual, but relate to another artist struggling to maybe translate what that concept is, or try to like creatively express something. Or it could be as simple as dealing with invoicing, you know, like we've done pieces about that. So it's a variety, but that's something that we definitely look at. We look at diversity. We look at making sure your story is cohesive. I know there are a lot of artists out there that are looking for that big label, and you know, when I look at like it, I just feel bad for an artist if I see a project and I've been eyeing it and then the next album comes out and you just, I know an A&R has picked through it. That just, we see it. I see it. I can hear it. And I can tell when an artist is, it's not their story anymore. Yeah. And so I think, and that just comes from many conversations with artists looking for different things to focus on.
Yeah, that comes back to assembling the right team that's like mm-hmm. not going to try and, you know, shape you into something that you're not. That's a great point. I have sort of a broad follow-up question for you. Just knowing that you've done, you know, digital marketing and partnerships in from a variety of different companies for, you know, a handful of years now. Like, how has the landscape of partnerships between music and tech sort of changed over the years? And, like, in this current moment, like, what are the opportunities looking like for artists today?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of brands create editorial platforms. And I think it's funny because they're usually pushing the product. I've been quite intentional about where I've worked. You know, everything that I've done, I've always wanted to be global facing. Everywhere that I've worked, I have a great team around me that kind of represent what I've worked in. So with, you know, we transfer a lot of the employees were creatives themselves. I have seen a lot of it's difficult. I think there's a balance, right? So like, I think with artists, you, in a way you have to think about yourself, who else is going to think about that, right? And you're going to create what you want to create. And I've seen brands kind of take that and take ownership of it. And I think that's scary to me. I think it's hard because there is so much that money can help with. And I think brands are changing. I think in tech, I think tech companies are becoming more collaborative. We worked with Grimes and she had mentioned downloading like a native music pack and downloading another like free video editing software, but we don't care because it's collaborative. Tech and creativity should be all collaborative. I think other brands that aren't recognizing that, then they're missing opportunities to work with artists. And the ones that are, I feel like, are they're trying to take ownership of it, which is so awkward because eventually people will find out that you've taken a creative project or you've molded it around you know, a social cause that the brand actually doesn't care about. So I think it just all comes down to authenticity, and brands are now beholden to that.
Mm-hmm. One more question, and then I think we can open it up to the room for questions too. I'm curious, Zoe, like, have you come across any challenges or obstacles, like when you've been trying to cross over into other industries or pursue various creative pursuits?
I would say just like the idea of spreading myself too thin sometimes because mm-hmm. I have like a hand in every single aspect of my career. Yeah, definitely. I feel like not having enough time to dedicate to each thing. And then I think also like being taken seriously in both avenues. Like I find sometimes maybe it's just like imposter syndrome because I like am so film forward. Sometimes I feel like I have to prove myself as a musician. Almost, and then also on the flip side, I feel like people don't like believe that I do everything on my videos because they don't believe that you can do both. So I feel like that is my biggest challenge, just like perception.
Yeah. Katie and Tiff too. Like, I'm curious if there's like any challenges or, you know, obstacles that you've sort of seen with the artists that you've worked with, or any just like last tips of, you know, takeaways or feedback.
Yeah, I think my biggest one is that starting an artist project and getting this sort of like brain dump of creativity and themes and what an artist wants to accomplish between videos and storytelling is so exciting at the beginning, but it's this, you know, there are always so many ideas, and then we put ourselves up against a clock in terms of release dates, and it's challenging to sort of rush all of those things, because if you're rushing something, there's going to be a loss in some sort of quality. And that's my constant challenge on the marketing side and product manager side is sort of like picking dates and then being beholden to them and trying to accomplish everything that we want to before we reach that date. And then once we get there, the challenge of, you know, being in an attention economy, once music is out, trying to drive back to it is really challenging as well, and keep people's attention. So, yeah.
That makes sense. I feel like that's a really good point in terms of, like, most artists, there's only a fixed amount of resources, and time being one of the most valuable resources. Like, it's important to be really strategic with where you're devoting your time, where you're devoting your money or your budget, and making sure that you have, like, a really thoughtful approach to everything that you're doing.
That's so true about the time, being as an independent artist, and, like, when you're coming up and you don't have a lot of resources, like, devoting time to, like, graphic design or editing, right, or, like, just learning. I mean, there's so many tools at your fingertips, literally on YouTube, just, like, search up how to do anything. But, like, learning how to, like, knowing how to design your own merch or, like, make marketing materials, do photo shoots, like, when you don't have a lot of resources, like, so important to be self-sufficient as you're coming up.
Yeah, I think that's a big point. Anything else you all want to add before we open it up to questions?
I mean, I don't envy independent artists, that's for sure. it's tough, and I think it's even tougher when you have actual story and something to stand for. I think, like, how do you balance, like, when to focus more on the video content, because so much of the platforms are video driven versus
music? I'm learning right now how to balance, because for the first time, like, in my artist career, I'm now, like, doing a lot more sessions and, like, doing a lot more on the music side. So now it's like, okay, I have to give up a little bit of control, like, on the editing side. Like, I'm going to get an assistant editor and, like, you know. But, I don't know. Like, it is a hard thing to balance. But it is so, like, a good example of how important, like, putting your efforts into video is somebody I fucked once, one of my latest songs that was out in May and, like, didn't really do very much streaming wise, and then I put the music video out for it in September, and then it blew up and got like 5 million views in 1 week, which was crazy, and then that drove obviously tons of listeners to Spotify, and then that's how I met all of you guys. So
cool. Well, I'm happy to open up the floor to any questions if anyone has any. There's a microphone back there, but I don't know if we
Hello. Does that work?
Yes.
Yeah. I have a question about short form versus long form content. So, you know, if you're making like a movie, how important is it to still make short form TikTok length content? Because I struggle to find the time to do both, and kind of kills me. You know, I spend hours editing my own video, thousands of hours, and there's no time left to jump on TikTok and make clips. So what's the
balance? I feel like it's so important, because TikTok, like, the algorithm of TikTok is so much better for discoverability. I feel like you will always find your audience on TikTok. I mean, like, a clarinet player in Kansas will find an audience. You know what I mean? Because, like, the algorithm is literally built to find the people that, like, will want to see your work. So I think, like, putting that time in is so important. I think that's how Somebody I Fucked Once went so viral. It's like, it became a huge thing on TikTok just by, like, all of the ways that I was kind of, like, shortening it and, like, making it for that platform.
What are some tips to do that? I mean, is it really a different product? Is each clip an entirely different work of art for you, or is it kind of like an ad for the main product?
I feel like it's mostly an ad for the main product.
Yeah,
because you don't want to, you obviously, like, don't want to spread yourself too thin. I think, like, finding, like, sounds or finding trends that are happening, and, like, figuring out creative ways to make the work that you've been making, like, fit into that, is definitely a smart thing, because then it's going to, boost it in the algorithm, get in front of people.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. This has been really helpful. Appreciate y'all being here. My question is, in trying to find that identity as an artist and in management, helping other artists find their identities, what would y'all recommend to make something that's just longstanding? Because I know it's kind of tough for artists who have kind of like a mission statement, and they surround themselves with brands that are that mission, and then 10 years later, they're still in that form. So it's like trying to avoid being, you know, just that same thing over a really long time, if you're lucky enough to get, you know, that traction. So just any insight on how to transform and grow as a person and still as an artist?
Yeah, I'm sure Katie has some great answers to this too. I mean, I'll just say, like, I think what you're saying is a really good point. I think that, like, artists are just human beings too, and we're all constantly evolving. And so I think, like, creating space for that and embracing that is really important. I think it is really important to have sort of a synthesized story and narrative of who you are and what sets you apart and what you're about as an artist, so that you can kind of easily communicate that out to potential partners or to your audience, but also to be okay to allow that to sort of evolve and grow as you evolve and grow is really important too. Something that we sort of do a lot with our artists at AWOL is kind of like take a pillars approach to our kind of content creation and find sort of like the key pillars of what an artist's story is, and then try to come up with content ideas that sort of fit into those pillars, so that there are just some like clear through lines that the audience is kind of constantly seeing as we're putting out content. But the pillars should and can change, you know, album to album or even, you know, song to song sometimes. Just kind of allowing that malleability, I think, is important.
Yeah, I was going to mention the same thing in terms of developing story pillars, just so, you know, and especially as we're introducing an artist to so many different potential partners, going back to those as a starting point is always really helpful in sort of creating the broader story, and pointing back to specific values is very helpful. I also think that taking risks is really important. That's how we all grow. And I think, you know, with the way that content and music moves so quickly now, we kind of have the ability to be more, you know, like take more risks, and it's not going to, you know, completely be damaging. It's all sort of serving the greater good of how we all learn as humans and artists, and just doing things that you feel in your gut are the right move. And also, you know, Bianca mentioned earlier, meeting audiences where they are is so important too. So I think it's about, you know, creating your art and then figuring out the right ways to get it to the audience, and but making sure that it's authentic to you, but also helping you grow as a person and an artist.
I think that you spoke to this too, and like that just figuring out the core of what it is that you stand for and like what you want to say, and making sure that always comes across in what you're making, even if like the actual art is like shifting and like you're exploring different, you know, different mediums, different sounds, different visuals and stuff, like maintaining that, like, you know, that mission statement.
Cool. Yeah, because we're taking risks too, like working with artists doing their first, you know, first essay with Kevin Morby, he's a songwriter. He had a long form essay or story, and we're taking that risk too. So I think when we see it and when we talk to artists about what they believe in and they have conviction for it, like that's gonna drive everything anyways.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. I just want a quick, brief backstory to this question, just like 15 seconds. But I spent the better part of the pandemic under the mindset of give yourself the opportunity to do the things you love. And this sort of mindset led me on this journey to self-producing my own first album, doing graphic design and branding for bands entering like their first label-backed projects, art directing music videos, hosting a music and art festival, growing my social media and following like more in a year than I had in like 10 years. But at the end of the day, like all of those things left me unsure of like how that was driving me towards a sustainable life. So I guess my question is, how do you define the difference between opportunities and distractions?
That's a great question. And I'll be totally honest with you. And this kind of like goes back to what Katie was saying, like really marketing music right now is like one big experiment. And that's just the truth. You know, anyone that tells you that they have it figured out and they like know the path and have the key is just not being honest with you. And so I think that it's a really delicate balance of, you know, like devoting time to the creative projects that you really love and then putting them out in the world and seeing sort of like what takes off and what has traction and both kind of equally measuring what is, you know, bringing you back revenue and also what is bringing you back joy, and then sort of like doubling down on those things, which is not a great answer, but I think it's just sort of the kind of struggle that we're all in right now working with artists.
You should read We Present. We have a lot of artist content that talks about that and talks about like if you're compelled to create or compelled to do one thing or the other. I mean, I think being WeTransfer being mostly creatives that use it, we do find content that we hope you relate to and that can help you kind of navigate that. But it isn't easy for sure, because one, you know, something that might, you might think is a distraction, but you're compelled to do it, could take off. And I think that's where the whole marketing thing is. It's the Wild Wild West, but if you want to do something, you should do it.
Yeah, I think the things that like are really inspiring you and that you're, you know, deriving joy from, it's like doubling down on those and just being patient. I think, you know, you'll never regret that.
Yeah. Okay. That's helpful. Thanks. We present as one of my favorite emails to get, so.
Great.
Mine too.
Oh, how about a panel full of women? Let's go. I was just going to ask you guys, what's a, like, your proudest sort of moment in the past like year or two in your career?
That's a great question. Who wants to start?
I've been lucky enough to have a lot of conversations with a lot of different artists. Good question, Chelsea. And my favorite conversations, one being, I was talking to this photographer, Ivan Barrios. He's been known as like this DJ Khaled's like homie who's been just, he just follows him with a camera. And he's been like, you know, a cousin of a cousin, who knows how he got to it. But through this conversation and watching his interview, I was listening to him, and we had told him, you'd actually low-key caught the 10 big, like in the past 10 years have caught the most legendary hip-hop moments. And you see this spark change where he just realized he's a photographer. And he's no longer just like the homie that's following this posse that taking photos. He's really caught every moment. And I think that is such a beautiful thing that we get to expose on We Present, is this moment of, wait a second, I am a photographer. I do have a style. I do have this craft. I think those moments have happened. There's been multiple times it's happened. And it's incredible to watch it and to see it. And in ways, multi-hyphenate makes him a multi-hyphenate artist. And we've talked to other artists that have been making costumes, but in ways has been part of fashion. It's not costumes anymore. They're creating a fashion line. And so those are, to me, that's probably the proudest moments that I've had working at We Present. And it's made it really fun.
I think for me, my proudest moment recently was somebody I fucked once, that my video doing what it did. just the fact that it's like a joyful video between two women with a happy ending. We don't get a lot of those in film and in TV. So yeah, I think that like doing the numbers that it did and having the reach that it did was a very proud moment for me. And also just like, of course, seeing all of the messages from young queer people every day that feel seen by it. And also like older queer people that are like, I didn't get to have that prom experience. And it was really healing for me to see someone else like, live that out in a video. So that was really a proud moment for sure.
I have so many, but I think the biggest one is working on Girl in Red's debut album release last year, mainly because we put together the entire album campaign through the pandemic, and I've worked day and night on, you know, 5 a.m. calls on the West Coast with the artist directly, management, and our team at AWOL out of the UK, just, you know, day in and day out, 7 days a week, putting together that album campaign and rallying an entire global company to have a chart-topping album that was released last April, and just hit so many amazing markers and accolades with that album was really amazing, and having not met her or her team until last fall was really exciting and just amazing to see how quickly a company can mobilize even when we're not in the office every day was just a really cool experience.
Very true. I think that my proudest projects over the past couple year have been, I worked on two different video or film projects with two of our artists that directed for the first time, and I think just being able to help support two female artists that like wanted to pursue that was just really fulfilling. I love producing film in general, but like helping, you know, two people do it for the first time and pursue that interest and bring to life these really beautiful creative projects was incredible. Yes, we're ready for you.
Sorry. My name is Josh. I'm I'm a comedian and I'm a filmmaker, and I made a web series that the creator of New Girl sponsored, and I made a soundtrack for it. And I was like, fuck, I really like making music. So my question is, how do you build a team in music if you're kind of exploring it for the first time?
So going back to sort of like some of the things that we were saying earlier, I think that like a lot of it is sort of like figuring out like who you are as an artist, like what your music sounds like, what your narrative is, how you kind of want to position your artist project, and then doing a lot of research into kind of like who the teams are out there that you feel like are doing it really well and that you think could complement, you know, your style of music and your sort of genre. And then reaching out, like, you know, with really thoughtful, you know, like emails or calls or whatever it is, kind of explaining why you feel like it would be a good fit and what you're trying to do. I think it's like a great first step.
I think also like doing it yourself in the beginning and just like, just so you like learn what all of those roles are. So once you start like actually, you know, wanting to take people on, you like have a better understanding of how to communicate with them, what you want, because you like know a little bit more like what they're doing.
Yeah. I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, I was just wondering what your thoughts were on systemic obstacles, because obviously, you know, having hybrid talents and trying to make everything work is already a lot of work. So what if, you know, you're facing obstacles in terms of sexuality, race, gender, and how either in personal experiences you've navigated that, or if you have general thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm lucky to have a really awesome team that is very diverse and has their own personal experiences, and that's something that we also look at. You know, just I'm just going to pump this project just once, but Riz Ahmed's The Long Goodbye, it's a short form video that's actually nominated for an Oscar this year in live action short. But that film was super interesting, and we actually, that was his first album, and we looked at it and we thought it was like, you know, a hip-hop music video, but actually what came out of it is this beautiful thing that I think a lot of people have experienced as the world gets more diverse, is this question, where are you from? And it came out so beautifully in that film, and naturally started just taking off. So now it's more than a hip-hop song. So I think through art, any of the struggles or concepts that are hard to explain, it kind of starts shedding its, you know, shedding its ways and making it into your creativity or however you want to express yourself. I think, yeah, it is always a struggle. It's like the tough part.
I think it's like women in music, I think every single one of us have experienced this at some point in our career. And, you know, it's definitely challenging. I'll say that one thing that has like definitely helped me is finding female mentors or support systems like these women, you know, where you kind of aren't feeling like you're on an island and you're in it alone, and you have sounding boards to kind of, you know, help coach you or guide you through challenging situations, I think has definitely been something that I've leaned heavily on throughout my career.
Same here, and I think it has helped me champion more diversity with our team and just with, you know, the people that we work with, the artists that we work with as well, and I think that the best thing that we can do constantly is raise the systemic obstacles, and because they can't be changed unless we talk about them and work really hard to correct them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think prioritizing, you know, like doing better for the next generation is so important, and taking people under your wing and trying to foster those support systems and communities ourselves all ships will rise.
Yeah, and that's how we choose creative projects, things that we can relate to. So bringing those conversations into the mainstream is definitely helpful.
Cool. Thank you for this talk. I manage a few musicians, and during the pandemic, I feel like a lot of them pursued kind of multi-hyphenate paths. One got into music supervision, one into acting, and one into art. And I think what they're all seeing is that the other thing is more lucrative than music. And so I would like to hear kind of your futurist hat on what is the long-tailed in the music industry if we have a lot of musicians spending more of their energy creating in other ways?
Where to start? I mean, that definitely makes sense. I think that fortunately for us on the business side and with AWOL in particular, we work with so many fantastic independent artists who are able to sustain a career in music and afford to pursue that dream, which has been really amazing. And AWOL has been very industry changing in terms of the deal structures that are offered to artists now so that it can become a very sustainable career. But yeah, that's, I mean, it's an excellent point. I think that going back to what Bianca said in terms of like what's helping an artist build revenue and also build joy, like those don't have to be the same things. And I think it's just about pursuing the things that take care of you as a human, whether that's financially or creatively, and you know, pursuing your passions. I don't know if that answers the question.
It is something at, you know, at AWOL, we've like, it's been really important to us to kind of like help kind of educate a little bit about the importance of ownership and what that actually translates to financially. You know, to Katie's point, like it's a lot easier to make a sustainable career when you're keeping the lion's share of the profits from your streaming revenue or, you know, any of your sources of revenue. So I think finding a team and kind of knowing the business side of it is really important to building sort of a sustainable career. But, you know, to Katie's point, I also think on some level going into music, like it has to just be about the love of creating music, you know, and just knowing that it's not the easiest way to kind of, you know, make a living a lot of the time.
Hi, yeah, I'm really curious as to your experience working with artists like Frank Ocean, who rarely market themselves and rarely drop music, and what the secret to their, or who work in completely disparate industries like jewelry, you know, or business, like what is the secret to their success? Just the authenticity of the music?
Yeah. It comes down to the music, and they, and working with Frank, he drove the creative ship. I think we've worked with artists where you could put like a Joe Perez, who's worked with Kanye, on that same artist. It will not come out the same. So I think with him, he has a vision, and something that I've learned from him is that a lot of art comes from just like observation of the world and limitation. He does hit a lot of limitations, and it's interesting to see what he creates from it. And that's something that, you know, I've taken just working with WePresent. I mean, it's easy for an artist to take the biggest check, but when it comes down to it, it's not about that, you know. And I think a lot of people have these values that they stick to. With Frank, marketing that album was not easy. It was not easy at all. But we kind of doubled down on the things that he was willing to do and the things that he was willing to stand for. And then made it in a way that, I mean, and there's a lot of secrets that went into it, but I'm like trying to think about just the way that we did it. We did it in a very strategic way. So it could have, you know, I think if you haven't listened to his like Apple radio show, I think that's like a labor of love, but that's definitely a part of the strategy as a whole. And with him, he's always been a multi-hyphenate artist. And again, it comes down to conviction. He believes that he can make jewelry, he's making jewelry. And it's quite interesting. He's quite an observer of art.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's like such a, going back to the conviction, I think he's such a good example of that kind of artist. You know, he doesn't like follow any of the traditional recommendations of how to market your music.
Nothing.
Absolutely
nothing.
None of them.
Follows nothing.
But look at how successful he is. And so I think that, you know, that again comes down to my favorite artists to work with, like have that sort of vision and conviction, and they stick to it even when we ask them not to sometimes, you know, and I really have a lot of respect for that. And I think at the end of the day, then you just have to be okay with whatever the outcome is and know that you're sort of living by your truth.
It comes by your team too. There's an element of trust, and that's something that we do at WePresent. We have to trust the artist to make something that we asked, like, okay, we're going to make this film together, and then hope that it comes out in a certain way that relays the message. And it's just an element of trust and building a team around you where you trust that process. With Frank, you know, trust is a huge thing for him. So it was basically a team of like three.
Cool. Unless there's any other questions, I think we can wrap up. Thank you again all for being here today.